It is Hard Knock Radio, Davey D, hanging out with you this afternoon. A few weeks ago, many of us woke up, and I'm not sure if we realized the severity of the policy that was put into motion. The Education Department, under Donald Trump, released a statement and then made a move and declared a number of professions were no longer professional. I'm just kind of summarizing it. And you looked at the list, and on it was nurses, nurses aides, special ed teachers, educators, and it went down the list. And at first I was like, well, who cares what they say? And then people were telling me, no, that's a very serious thing because it means that a lot of people who want to go into those professions are severely handicapped socially, economically. Not being able to get loans. And basically, this was a slick move to upend a number of professions that many people in our community depend upon as Black folks, as Brown folks, as others, and that we find large concentrations of Black and Brown folks, folks who and women who have sat here and said, look, there's a void in the community. I'll be a teacher. There's a void in the community. I will make sure I'm frontline and I'm doing this nurse's work, et cetera, et cetera. So today I wanted to bring some frontline professionals. Jennifer Easton is, I'm going to say you're the head of the union, but you're not. but she's the vice president for SEIU, an astute activist. Frontline freedom fighter. And when you see her coming, if she's on your side, you're in good hands. The other person is Chris Emden. He's an educator's educator. Educators look to him. He's the author of several books, including his most recent one, which is called Ratchademics. And I'm glad to have you, especially because you're in the middle of a conference. But I couldn't think of two better people to have on to talk about this. And we're also being joined by one other person. So I think we're going to have a triumphant here with Dr. Norlisa Cooper. So as Dr. Norlisa gets ready, good to have you, sis. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to start off with you, Jennifer, and then I'm going to go to Chris. Talk a little bit about this. You're in the medical field, or at least your union is involved. We were just talking about situation that happened where a frontline worker was stabbed by somebody at a hospital, somebody who goes to help the people, and we have folks going, well, this isn't really a professional job, and this happens in front of a cop who we are putting up and saying these are the professions, right? They have advertisements and recruitment all over. They can do no wrong, but it happened on their watch. So let's talk a little bit about this professionalism and what this means, especially for people in your union.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on today, Davey. I've been a registered nurse for 15 years, and one thing I will say for sure is that I am a professional. Every nurse who takes care of anyone, if you've ever been ill, had a loved one in the hospital, you know that nurses are the people who are going to provide the care to make your family members well. The doctors might show up once a day, if that, write something down and leave. And you are left in the care and the good hands of nursing professionals who nurse you back to health. We don't call it doctor back to health. We call it nurse back to health because the nurses are the people who are doing the work to make sure people get well again. And the insult that has been put upon us as a society by the Trump administration is to demean and undermine a profession that is 88% women and more than two-thirds people of color. So we know that the Trump administration has been making racist attacks from day one, from the first administration and ongoing to now. And this is a continuation of that. By taking away people's access to funding for their education, it means that people will not be able to enter the profession, period, point blank. They've already taken funding away from Medicare and Medicaid, to the tune of $1 trillion. And that means that people who are already in the profession, people who already are in need of care, hospitals and medical systems are going to have less access to funding in order to provide care today. So people are going to need to see their doctor in the emergency room instead of as preventative care. More and more people will get sick. But by now saying we will basically destroy the pipeline of providers, it means that not only will we see less care being provided today, we will see less care being provided in the future. And it's really an unfortunate full frontal attack. They're just coming at us from all sides, and we're in trouble as a society.
Before I bring Chris Emden on, let me ask you this. Last time we had you on, you pointed out the deep cuts of 300,000, not 300, three, not 3,000, 300,000 women who were let go by the federal government. And that is something where we have not seen the horns being raised and the pots being clanged. This is not frontline rallying cry. But connecting the dots, what does this really mean? This seems like a continuation of that assault, and it's going to cut deep. But if I'm thinking federal job and I'm thinking nurses, that's cutting into the economic viability in many of our communities.
You
Am
got
I
that
right?
right. Yeah. The reason I became a nurse, it was after the mortgage crisis in 2007 and 2008. My mom had been a nurse, and I knew that there was a nursing shortage. There has been a nursing shortage for far too many years in this country and all across the world, really. But I knew that there was stability in the nursing profession, and I would always have a job. And you're right. This is an economic attack on all of our communities and on people of color, especially because, my mom was a nurse. She was educated in Atlanta, Georgia, at Grady Memorial. She was in the second integrated class. And the amount of racism she faced was no different from the amount of racism I faced in 2008 when I was the only Black student in my class of 48 nursing students. So,
Wow.
it's not easy for us to enter the profession. It's not easy for us to elevate in the profession and get out of, bedside nursing into a management level career. The higher you get up, the whiter it gets. And this is what the Trump administration wants to make sure is enshrined, that people who have always had more funding, people who have always had access to resources, will continue to have access to resources and education and the career of their choosing. And if medical disparities and outcomes, like we saw during COVID, Black and Brown people dying at higher rates, even with the workforce being two-thirds people of color, it is going to
Right.
be far harder for our communities to stay well and healthy and safe. So this is really problematic. It's economic. It's about the health of our communities.
I'll say this, having access to sisters like yourself and others, and I can name off a lot of folks in the medical field who have been able to pull my coattail and say, hey, you need this, you need that, because I remember going to the doctor one time and it was just, oh, when you get older, blah, blah, blah. But, a buddy of mine who's a dentist who I went to school with, he's like, hey, man, you need to go and get these labs checked. And once I said those magic words, everything opened, right? But he said, I stay in this profession for this very reason. You see what
Exactly.
I'm saying? And I think that becomes crucially important at a time when everybody's being marginalized and erased and the whole nine. We depend upon you. We give you a phone call and go, my throat hurts. What's going on? They said, I'm getting older. And you might say, no, that means A, B, C, and D. So thank you for your service. And we'll continue this conversation. Chris Emden, I wanted to have you in here for a couple of reasons because you're on the front line in a couple of realms. Universities are under attack, defunded, and if they're not being defunded, there's severe restrictions being put on them. And depending on where you're at, if you're in the Deep South and they just say get rid of Black studies and and that you all hate America and the whole nine, if you're in the blue state like here, then they put the trope of anti-Semitism and they start bringing that whole thing in there and go, oh, you're talking ethnic studies and you mentioned this, and therefore, that's what's happening in Cali. So that's one level. And then just somebody like yourself who comes from the hood, who's written books on how to teach our people, and has been a frontline force, who's developed curriculum and pedagogy, all of a sudden you're not a professional. And I'm like, I've seen you pack a house with thousands of people to talk, you know? So how are you seeing this, especially with these two-pronged attacks coming to somebody like yourself, you know, coming to somebody who's in a profession like yourself?
Well, I just want to start by just thanking you for the invitation. It's always a gift to share space with you. I really appreciate your profound insight and for bringing these issues to our community in beautiful ways. And then I wanted to say to Sister Jennifer, I mean, your analysis just now was just so spot on, came with data and facts, but also experiential knowledge, and that adds such color and patina to this landscape. And I bring that up for a very particular reason. Your ability to be able to say, here are the stats, but here's what it feels like in real time. And here's an anecdote about my own experiences as I come into nursing. And here's the experiences that it impacts the community. I think oftentimes that kind of deep knowledge base gets dismissed as non-intellectual and non-academic by folks who don't have the capacity or the soul to speak with such humanity. The reason why nursing and teaching matters to our community, and the reasons why Black folks have always pursued those professions, is because we have an innate capacity to tap into our humanity to know how to heal people, whether it's their body or their minds and souls. So while nurses, they take care, they understand the whole concept of the body in really powerful ways, medically and academically, they also know how to be able to talk to people, how to console people, how to connect to people, how to get them psychologically prepared to be able to receive those medicines. Educators do the same thing. We give young folks information, but we also talk about how is it that young person isn't understanding that? How do I be nimble in the moment? It's a merging of psychology and sociology and anthropology and pedagogy all at once. To be a teacher and do it well, you have to have all those skill sets. Now, here's the thing. The anchor of both nursing and teaching is soul. The reason why Black folks gravitate to those professions is not because they're easier, it's because we have a certain level of humanity that comes out of being the outcome of chattel slavery, is that you develop a capacity to understand people and develop a kind of empathy. And so people who lack soul, people who lack humanity, people who lack empathy, people who lack an understanding about the socio-psychological phenomena that affect people's lives will always cast judgment on what we do simply because they may have the credential, but they don't have the soul. So it's easy for them to say teaching and nursing are not professional because that's their way of allowing something that is beyond them to be made beneath them. This law around loans was not the beginning of the deprofessionalization of nursing or teaching. The minute that these jokers put a Department of Education leader, who is the spouse of a wrestler, who the only thing we know them for is being slammed to the ground in this caricature of sport, to lead the Department of Education, we should have known then that this supposed big, beautiful bill was going to lead to the dismantling of the value for education. The minute you put somebody in power who talks about women, Black women publicly and unapologetically in dismissive ways, you should have known that the professions where they're the most expert in were going to be dismissed. And we oftentimes miss the canaries in the coal mine and get frustrated when the laws and rules come in place. And that's what we are seeing now is the aftermath of decisions that were already made when you put a soulless government into place to be in charge of your country. Now, to talk specifically about teaching, and we could even talk about nursing. The damage is not in the fact that we can't take out loans. It's in the one that we're not professional. But most importantly, is in the recognition that Black folks who've been historically socioeconomically disadvantaged in our country do not have the social, the socioeconomic capacity to be able to blindly just go and say, I'm going to go to school for XYZ years and I got $200,000 to do it. And they know that. What we've been able to do because of our resilience is, yo, listen, I'm gonna go to nursing school or education school part-time. And when I do part-time, I'm gonna get a low loan, and that loan gonna cover the tuition, but a little extra bread. And that little extra bread is gonna help me with taking my babies to school and getting some food on the table. So we utilize that loan infrastructure to sustain our lives as we pursue the professional degree. And then when we get the professional degree, we're also most likely to pay it back. Black folks have humanity. We have soul to choose the right professions, and we have this ability to say, you know what? It don't matter what it is, yo. I'm gonna use this to sustain my life now, and then pay it back. And the folks who are getting the professional degrees don't be paying back their loans. They wait and wait and wait till somebody out there forgive them. And so this is not just an assault on Blackness. It's also an economic decision that undermines the country. simply because these jokers want to attack black folks and the work we've always done.
Let me
Anybody
ask
who's done
you.
anything worth doing in this country, on a political landscape, on an activism landscape, began that work in the classroom. Whether we're talking about W.E.B. Du Bois or we're talking, anyone who, Martin Luther King, anybody in our community who's done anything knows that the you know, if you look at the war against white supremacy as a war, the soldiers in that war go to the classroom for boot camp. When we work with our babies and we learn patience and we learn resilience and we learn love, we then become equipped to go out there and make decisions for the best of our community. So the decimation of education and the devaluing or the lack of professionalization of education is not just something in, it's not just an assault in a contemporary, it's an assault on a historical pathways to fight white supremacy, which is in the K-12 classroom. And I think all those things must be put to bear when we talk about this assault by the federal government.
Chris Emden, I appreciate that. And I'm going to have a big question for all three of you. I want to bring a registered nurse and a doctor, Dr. Nolisa Cooper, in the building. Jennifer Esten and Chris, they said a lot. What would you add to this? And tell a little bit about yourself, because, are you a nurse? Are you a doctor?
Yes. Oh, well, I'm always a nurse first, but I have a doctorate in nursing with a
Oh, okay.
concentration in health policy. So I have worked alongside Jennifer for many, many years. I work at the Department of Public Health. I've been a registered nurse now for 18 years. And I am I think we're in an interesting space. I feel like both Jennifer and Christopher have said everything that I probably would have said and more, but I would just add to that. Academia. I know that there's a lot of attention being paid to nurse practitioners who work in primary care and limiting access to healthcare. But when you think about academia, in order to teach in many of the institutions, you need a master's degree. That is the entry point. And if we are saying already that we have a nursing shortage, we are now limiting our ability to grow professors, which will in then turn impact our ability to grow new nurses. And also the state of research. I consider myself to be a nurse scientist. And so when you think about the cost to get your PhD, less than 1% of nurses have a PhD in nursing. And then when you bring into the doctorate of nursing practice, it's less than 3% combined. And so in order to get these advanced practice degrees, you have to go to school and you have to have money to pay for it. And so I think that this is really stifling people's economic mobility as well as research. We're already being attacked with everything that's happening at the federal level around NIH grants. And the ability to fund our research, what type of research we can and cannot do. And this is only going to further impact our ability to conduct meaningful research and really research that can transform care, the way in which we deliver care. My research really centers around policies and whether or not they mitigate or reinforce healthcare disparities. And that work right now is really under attack.
Right.
And so,
They want to continue those disparities, it sounds like.
exactly.
And
Exactly.
let me ask you all this. A couple of things come to mind. Thing number one is that I'm wondering if there are folks in high places looking and saying, we got a robot that can do all this nursing stuff. We can do the artificial intelligence thing. We can replace Jennifer. We don't need Dr. Cooper. We can do this. And why do we need Chris Emden? We can AI his classroom, right? So you have an industry that has been pushing all the way, and I can tell you how it's doing in music and all that other stuff. So they're making these inroads. You don't need filmmakers. We can put it here, right? And you see folks buying it up. They go to landlords. We can help you set your rents and all that using these tools, right? So you have an industry that is bustling, a $1 trillion-plus industry that may be looking at, we have wireless, I mean, driverless cabs. We can have nurseless hospitals, right? We can have teacherless schools, right? So that's one aspect that's there. And then the other thing, you were talking, Dr. Cooper, about, policies, and what I caught from that was ingenuity, right? The loans and all that, right? Well, we shouldn't forget that when people said, let's do a workaround, have we forgotten the three black women down in Atlanta that's like, let me just start doing microloans for black women and make sure that they can get in? And all of a sudden, some Zionist fool came out of nowhere, Blumenthal, I think is his last name, and sued and said, y'all can't give these free loans. You can't do loans for black folks. So it seems like there's a cruelty that's at play. First, they're saying, pull yourselves up by the bootstraps so he can go home and get a $200,000 loan from his family. I can't. I might have to go to Brother Chris, and he might say, here's $200,000 for the brothers in the hood. And now you got somebody suing and saying he's discriminating. So it's a thing at all costs, which leads me to this. Do we have any viable solutions that we should be thinking about? Do we have some best practices that we should now start to deploy? I, for one, think we have to be intentional with our relationships and make sure that we continuously break bread and check in. But there may be some practical things that you are seeing in your respective professions that we should start doing. I'll start off with you, Jennifer, and go to Chris. I'm mindful of your time, Chris. Oh.
I can see Chris is chomping at the bit. I think you're right, Davey. I think we have to be very creative in the ways that we approach, because Medicaid and Medicare reimbursements are going to be a thing of the past. They're going to be too small to be meaningful. And as Norlisa pointed out, nurse practitioners have been taking the space of our doctor shortage and have been filling those gaps for a long time. And in an increasing way, we've seen over the last few years that nursing schools have shifted away from allowing nurses to become nurse practitioners based on experience and a 2-year program. And now, if you want to be a nurse practitioner in any specialty, you need a PhD. So, as Chris was saying, the changes have not happened in this one moment. And I think that as a profession, we've kind of been slow to be nimble. We haven't necessarily figured out how to overcome these new obstacles, but it's going to require a whole different set of flexibility. And we live in this monetized capitalist society where everything is based on dollars and cents. And I think the example you gave about sisters in Atlanta giving microloans, the one thing that is going to shift geographically throughout our world, bricks. You got to change the game altogether. The dollar cannot be almighty any longer. But here, and I mean, I don't know, Davey. I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer for how we're going to shift it up. But I think the Panthers had an answer. The 10-point program, where they brought food, education, and health care to the community with no cost, because the unemployment rate was so high that people had time. And people had skills, and they just delivered what they could with no cost to the community. And it became the most dangerous thing that any leader of the American free world could imagine, to the point where they started having to assassinate people. So, I think it's been done before. And in order for us to really make it, that means that we're gonna have to be feeding each other, and we're gonna have to just provide what we can to the community and release the hold that the capitalists have on us.
Right. We're going to have to use our imagination and not have that
Absolutely.
be taken away. I want to say one thing, and I don't know, you said slow, and that's probably true, but I like to say that people got comfortable. And with the comfort, I think they forgot that you're in a fight, right? And the comfort is like, well, Jennifer's out there fighting. Girl, go ahead, you get it. I'm gonna sit up here and play my PlayStation. Oh, you still out there fighting? Keep it up. Go. Two thumbs up, and I'm gonna go to the game and to the club until, it hits me. And then we're coming in and like, what do we do? And I ain't trained. I haven't been to the gym in years. I'm mentally not there. And I'm addicted to the comfort. So now I'm not fighting for our people, but I'm fighting for, I just want to be able to keep my cable on, And so, again, I think you said it, Chris, we're at war. The war has not stopped. It's just been camouflaged. And we'd be best to be intentional about tapping in with frontline folks like yourself, and at least, go to the dojo to quote a friend of mine. What's the DJ's name? You know, out of Philly, Chris. Tall dude. He always says, "Go to the dojo." Damn, he'll come to me in a minute. But anyway, see, he always says, "Go to the dojo every day." And I think mentally and socially, we have to do that. Chris, I know time is short, so let me get some comments from you on solution.
You were so spot on, and because you literally started where I wanted to, around
Okay.
our so you know, we just have to keep it a buck. Black folks have been given just enough to be pacified by the spoils of a hyper-capitalist state, and I think that was intentional, and I think a lot of our folks just got just enough to not have what they need, but enough to not feel downtrodden. And they're like, we good. And I think the chief thing that we have to develop is resilience. And when I say that out loud, I'm saying it to myself. I say that even for my children. I grew up in Brooklyn, in the Bronx, in New York City. We didn't have nothing. I vividly remember 13 people in a two-bedroom apartment. This sounds like a Ghostface verse. And I bust my behind my whole entire life, and I'm afforded certain things. And one day I looked at my kids and I was like, y'all soft. You know what I mean? And I said that I love my babies, but I also realized that I've been able to accomplish what I have because I had an inbuilt capacity to be resilient. And the chief thing that we all collectively have to do, because I don't want to just be doom and gloom here, I want to give pathways, is to recognize that our ancestors have always been resilient, and to not bathe ourselves in pessimism. I always say pessimism wears a cloak called realism. So people say like, I'm just being real, but you're pessimistic. And we can't afford to be pessimistic when these folks are assaulting us. We need imagination. So we need resilience plus imagination to equal possibility. So I always tell my babies like, you got to work hard. This cat's is gunning for you. You won't have to be threatened by it, but you have to understand you have an innate capacity to work. So you have to go out there and work. So that's the first part. The second part is to understand the point I made earlier about the fact that I don't know how to say this, but we are a soulful, magical, unexplainable phenomenon just by having drops of the sun in our veins. Black folks, that's what we do. These folks try to reconstruct other ways to make us feel less than. And then we're like, I bet. And for a minute, we're like, this sucks. And then we're like, yo, here's how we flip that. I was talking to a sister literally about 15 minutes ago, and she's like, yo, I'm developing this AI attachment that allows folks to be able to use the existing AI. Attach that to their AI and filter out anything that's coming through the algorithm that might be anti-black. So I don't have this is what black folks do. So we're like, yo, AI is coming. It's going to be replaceable. And black folks say, yo, let me create something. So hip hop is making something out of nothing. So once you recognize from whence you came, who you are and whose you are, recognizing by function of being melanated, it doesn't matter what they throw at you, you can flip on it. So you can't rest at the anger. That becomes the point from which I turn on my imagination and my resilience. So I want to make those two points. And then the third part is, which is important for us to note, is that it is called artificial intelligence for a reason. It ain't real. There's something that we do in the look in our eyes, in the nod of our heads, the touch on the shoulder, the gaze, and that's the part that's healing. Ain't no machine gonna ever do that. And like right now, I'm actually in the island of Barbados, not on vacation. Their prime minister, Mia Motley, is a force of nature. And this sister has said, listen, I don't care what's going on anywhere else in the world. In this nation state, we are going to be Bayesian. We're going to be diasporic. We're going to create a direct line to Ghana. We're going to import all our timber from Guyana. We're going to reimagine what schools look like. And then she's brought folks from the diaspora who are down to do that work to make this nation state an exemplar of what possibility can be. That's what we do. So to all our listeners, yes, them jokers in the federal government try to deprofessionalize the careers that mean the most to us because we have soul. Yes, artificial intelligence is threatening to erase the humanity of blackness. And at the same time, the recognition of our magic, right? The nod I just got from Sister Jennifer to let me know, boy, you on, which got me turned more up. Ain't no AI can offer that to me. And we have to be able to quantify the value of the seemingly unquantifiable phenomena that is the magic of blackness.
Real talk. I appreciate that, Brother Chris. Christopher Emden, if you're just tuning in, we have Jennifer Easton, both of them esteemed professionals, and we also have Dr. Nalisa Cooper. And by the way, I was thinking Rich Medina. Let me give credit. Rich Medina, who's an
That's
incredible
my
DJ.
bad. I should have had your back on
No,
that one.
but he's the one that always says, go to the dojo, and that's a mantra. You wake up in the morning and you train. Train your mind, train your spirit, train your physical, right? And that to your point about the kids being soft, it's like, no. Y'all gotta get up. My kids are like, why are you making me throw out the garbage? Why are you making me, come do these things? I could do it, but you have to get used to being able to walk and talk and do those chores. It ain't, because sooner or later you're gonna have to do it one way or the other. And if you get too lazy, then you're not gonna know how to function. And the next level for all of us is like, can you hunt? Can you cook? Can you survive without the comfort? And all the things that, I think we can all agree go back to our basic roots, because we didn't have without, we were always without, and we can always imagine and do something that then becomes, people look around and say, I didn't think to do it that way. I didn't think to dress that way. I didn't think to talk that way. And then it becomes institutionalized. The flip on it is that we don't allow it to happen on our watch anymore, that we give them B level game, but we keep the A level game to ourselves. You get pumpkin pie at the picnic, but when we go home, we're eating the sweet potato pie. You don't get the sweet potato pie unless you're family. Pumpkin pie for you. So I appreciate that, Chris. If you have to go, I'm gonna let you go, because I know you're at a conference. I appreciate you coming in. And let me turn attention to Dr. Norlisa Cooper. I started off with the AI and all this stuff that we were talking about that they want to kind of use to water down, or bring a more professional type of thing to your practice. How have you been battling this, and anything you want to build off of that you heard the other two guests say?
There is no replacing human touch ever. So, I mean, I think that AI could be beneficial in some ways, maybe helping with transcription or something like that. But in terms of AI in the healthcare system and the way in which we deliver care, it's no replacing human touch. And just to kind of go back on your previous question, like, well, what do we do now? My first thought was to burn it down and start over. But the problem with burning it down, if you don't have the right people in place, then you end up with the same thing, right? So I think it's burn it down, get the right people, but also turn to community. We have resources within the community to support people through their journeys of becoming healthcare providers or researchers or going into academia. We really need to lean into to community more now than ever, because the institutions in which we were relying on have failed us. And to some extent, people have become complacent because it's not a constant battle all the time. People, are not used to it, but I think that we need to get back in these streets, and we need to start demanding that these institutions support us. But throughout that process, we need to turn to community.
Right now we've been talking about this from the vantage point of Black folks. And when I go into hospitals, depending on which part of the country I'm in, if I'm in the Bay Area, I see Black folks, I see a lot of Filipino. If I go down south in Texas and Arizona, I see Black folks, but I also see brown folks, right? And so you start to see this change. If I'm back in New York, I see a lot of Jamaican sisters, and Haitians in these things. And with these assaults, it's not just you two on the phone, but it's everybody else. And has that been a realization? And I'm asking this very pointedly, because nursing and teaching for some, but in particular, nursing has been a way for folks who are newly, here to get in, right? You can get in, through this. And so are you all alone, or are folks realizing, like, yo, this is an attack on all of us? And we all need to, posse up and make sure this doesn't happen. Or are folks kind of like, maybe if I, wink and nod over here, They'll just throw Jennifer and Dr. Cooper out, but I get to still keep my job. And that's a reality that we gotta, people hedging their bets.
I mean, I think divide and conquer is always at play. I think that there's always, Trump got elected because some people thought that it was going to happen to someone else and not to them. And I think the rude awakening is that none of us are safe. And a lot of the folks who thought that they were safe realized that, oh, poor white people, regular white people might also be harmed because of these policy changes. Rich white people might be harmed. Like, everybody's going to be harmed is the truth of the matter. But I think that what Norlisa was saying, and she alluded to the deep community that it requires. We work with some really strong organizers of all races and genders in San Francisco, some nurses who 100% get it, and it doesn't matter their background. They know that we're under attack. And have been working tirelessly to try to make sure all of us have resources. But I also want to point to the community groups that exist that Norlisa is a part of, Chi Eta Phi, sorority. Tell me your other sorority.
AKA.
Yeah. Let you say it yourself.
You're one of them people, huh?
But Chi Eta Phi.
Let me throw up the diamond. Oh no, the diamonds is
Oh,
the other
that's.
one. I'm just messing
Oh,
with
we
you.
gotta talk
I'm
about
just, I
that
did.
later.
No,
When we
it's pink
have
and green, pink
nursing,
and green.
we have specific nursing sororities like Chi Eta Phi. When I was a nursing student and I was a single parent and I was struggling financially, I was able to get two scholarships because Chi Eta Phi is a historically Black sorority that is made up of nurses of all genders that want to support the uplift of our people becoming professionals, becoming nurses. And between Chi Eta Phi, the Black Nurse Association, we do have outside entities that understand that we have to support one another. And I think we have to lean on those community resources more and more, because even if other folks are ringing the alarm, even if other folks get it, that AI is coming, that the finances are drying up from the federal government, it doesn't matter. We have to save us. Nobody's going to come and rescue the Black community as our health deteriorates. Nobody's going to come and make sure that our mortgages are paid when 300,000 Black women no longer have jobs in the federal government. Nobody's going to come along and make sure that we're okay. We have to make sure we're okay. And I think that these institutions exist as service organizations because we have to serve ourselves, we have to serve each other. So, I do think that people get it. And I think that the capitalist corporatization of healthcare is really problematic. And I think that people in leadership roles have for a long time tried to squeeze profit out of healthcare, which is an unfortunate motive that has already moved so much of what's possible in hospital systems and in healthcare systems. Away from like focusing on patients and focusing on care and focusing on outcomes, just to what's the cost and how much are we going to have to pay in order for certain things to happen, regardless of outcome. So, I think we have to shift because even if we have folks who are not Black and Brown raising the alarm, we can't necessarily trust that they're going to do the right thing.
Real talk. As I'm hearing y'all talk and seeing the organizations that you mentioned, is there an opportunity to have a parallel structure, a shadow structure? If they say you're unprofessional, well, no. The authority that you just talked about, the organizations that you talked about, you're the ones that determine what's professional and what's not. You'll set the standards, right? If you're a vice president of a union, is there a pathway where union members, whatever that means, they have access to the clinic that you all set up, right? We all pay dues each month, whether I'm working and sweeping floors or whatever is required in your union or not, but I'm a dues paying member And, and with that comes some responsibility. Well, if you're a dues-paying member, and you're not employed, in the union that you all represent, then, your employment means you got to go sweep that clinic. You know what I mean? There's got to be ways in which we as community kind of reimagine and put these things together. And I'll say this, what comes to mind is just looking at these formation of these white enclaves, these white communities that they're trying to create in things like that in Arkansas. And I think they're borrowing a page of like, if you're going to be here in this community, here are your responsibilities. It might be you patrol and make sure nobody comes in. You do this, you do that, you do the other. But that's something that we were doing way back in the days, and in some places it's still practiced, but it might not have the same intentionality, and it might not have been scaled up. But if, but in other words, if I want to get down with you all, there's got to be some responsibility, some standards that need to be met, some expectations that we all agree upon. And then we move forward just because it's war. Any possibilities for any of that?
I mean, I do think that organizations can put out position statements because that's not unheard of. Like, organizations do put out position statements and say, and they can say, like, although the federal government has no longer recognized nursing as a profession, we do. The problem, though, still centers around the ability of people to borrow money to go to school. So even if those professional organizations put
Let me
out
ask you one.
statements,
Let me ask you one. Let me ask you one question, not to cut you off. Are they borrowing money from the government, which is our tax dollars, or are they borrowing money from banks as private institutions? So are they trying to move us into the privatization aspect?
I mean that if people are still trying to go to school and no longer have access to these loans, it could lead people to have to borrow from private companies, private banks, right? And those and could end up being predatory loans with super high interest rates and all kinds of things, right? But I think that if organizations are going to put out position statements saying that nursing is a profession, it needs to come with some dollars. To
Right.
support people, to stand in the gap. And so, if the American Nurses Association and all the Black Nurses Association, CAIDAFI, all of the Hispanic Nurses Association, all of them, if they still, if they want to put out position statements, they should try to make funding available for people, not just talk about nursing being a profession, but also continue to support people through their journey, their educational journey. But people may turn to some of those private loans in order to continue their education, which is also problematic.
Can I just add
So
to that,
that, yeah,
Annalise?
go ahead.
So I was just in the Philippines doing some educational labor organizing, and their organizing is under attack by the government. I met with some folks who had been disappeared, who had been arrested, who had been, one guy had been held for a year simply because they were labor organizing. And what they have done in their small unions, I mean, we're talking about 90 members. And Norlisa and I are both a member of SEIU 1021, which is 60,000 members. They have put together, with their state-sanctioned minimum wage of 500 pesos a day, and our $1 is equal to 50 of their pesos. So we're talking about they make $10 a day. They have put together a community fund to give union members loans when necessary because the financial system is unavailable to them. And they live in such dire circumstances that ingenuity has been thrust upon them. Like there is no way to rely on a social safety net because it's the safety net doesn't exist. And our safety net is being demolished right now. And I think our ingenuity is going to have to come back so that these structures and systems that do exist today, I think on the union front, people are wondering what's going to happen to us when the Medicare cuts come and the potential layoffs follow, and the union dues no longer come in the structure that we know and exist right now. We are going to have to create our own insurance. We are going to have to create our own loans. We are going to have to create our own ways of taking care of each other. And, one of the clinics that still exist from the Black Panthers, there are many here in the Bay, but one of them, West Oakland Health Center, is still run by Black people, employing Black providers who provide services in West Oakland, and they are expanding. And that is a site that currently exists for us, by us, with the legacy of the Panthers that we are going to have to lean on, and we're going to have to go and support because the Medicare cuts are going to affect them as well. They're not going to have as many reimbursement dollars as they used to. And the people in our community, are we going to be forced to the private system? Are we going to be forced to Kaiser, where Kaiser's going to say, if your insurance isn't the same, we're not going to serve you? Or we all know what it's like at Kaiser. It takes weeks to be seen. Even if you have an emergency, you're like, I need to see somebody. Get in line, honey, because they have hundreds of thousands of other people whose money they're taking every month, but whose services they're not providing. So we're also going to have to make some different choices as people seeking care and people inside institutions for how we structure. And I was blown away by what I saw in the Philippines. The poverty, people living in open sewage, like it was just in the after effects of her Typhoon Tino and their mega earthquake. Like they were destitute, but they were full of hope and full of fighting spirit in a way that I know I grew up with in Black community, that we have to be full of fighting spirit
Real
because
talk.
it's the fight that is going to bring us to one another and going to sustain us through these hard times.
You know, that ingenuity and intentionality is what I'm thinking and what I'm hearing you say. But I'll say this, and we'll close out with 60,000 members. And the money that's needed is to usually go for education, a good chunk of it. Well, maybe 60,000 people need to go. And as you said, if we adopt a clinic, maybe we need to adopt a couple of schools and go to these schools and say, look, you can't charge 6,000, 7,000, 45,000, or whatever amount a year. We got to do something different. And there's got to be somebody that's going to be like, nah, if you're a nursing student, here's the conditions in which we can make this happen, versus pricing us out of it. And so maybe that becomes a pathway. And that's something that might have to be done behind the scenes. If employers can go up to hospitals and say, give us this rate because we got 100,000 people, or unions can say, we got X amount of members. We should be able to go to a school, whether it's a junior college or, a community college or something, and say, make this available. And if
Or
we're in
even
California,
tapping into the people who are already part of the union. We have Dr. Cooper, who is a professor. We have so many of our members who are professors. We could just say, we are going to use our professors. You're teaching this, you're
teach
teaching
us.
this, you're teaching this. And we facilitate it ourselves. We don't even have to look outward because the wealth of the community is so great.
But a lot of these universities are also public. And so that's what I mean. We can, I mean, it's you do both and, you could be like, there's no reason why it should be $50,000 to go get a nursing degree. Let's bounce that down to five, And you figure it out. We
Well,
can
let's bounce that
guarantee.
down to a work study. Like you're gonna put in your work to get there. Like you say, sweeping, cleaning, cooking, taking care of the kids after school, because everybody has to do their part. And this is the thing about the capitalist mindset. Like the money that becomes it's so necessary when none of us have it. Is it even necessary anymore?
True. You have to come up with a new value system. Your money's not good here, but your effort is.
Absolutely. Remember, that used to be what people said. Your money's no good here. Don't put that back in your pocket. You just come.
But you got
That's
to do these
love.
dishes when you finish eating. I mean, literally, and that's that because it's a communal thing. It's keeping the
Exactly.
household together. I cook, you clean, you take out the trash. And if one person doesn't do that, then the thing falls apart.
Well, then they get in line. Then we remind people that it's a new way.
I appreciate you, Jennifer. Dr. Cooper, let me give you last words. Anything you want to leave us with?
So I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to be here. And we're going to continue to fight to have nursing recognized as a profession. Nurse practitioners fill the gap, and they are very much needed to ensure that people have access to health care, as well as training up the next generation of nurses in academia.
Dr. Cooper, much appreciated. Thank you. Jennifer, thank you, Jennifer Esten, and I want to thank Chris Emden. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.